And welcome to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, California, and on the web at kuci.org. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Writers on Writing features authors, poets, literary agents, and editors discussing the art and the business of writing. Today my guests are Julie Castiglia and Doug Lyle. Julie Castiglia, prior to becoming an agent, freelanced as an editor and writer for 11 years. She has authored 3 published books, as well as articles, essays, and poetry for literary anthologies. The agency has successfully placed many significant nonfiction and fiction titles with major publishers. These sales have also extended to film, audio, foreign, commercial, and electronic rights, where appropriate. Several of these books have won awards. Science of Desire and She Went to War were listed as most notable books on the New York Times list. Mark Twain A to Z, published in hardcover by Facts on File and in softcover by Oxford University Press, won the ALA Outstanding Reference Award, and Living with Our Genes appeared on Library Journal's list Best Sci-Tech Books. The agency has accepted as clients many first-time authors, both fiction and nonfiction, launched their careers, and is now selling their 3rd and 4th books. One such author, Lori Beth Jones, saw her first book, Jesus CEO, published by Hyperion Disney, spend 14 months on Business Week's bestseller list and appeared on that list again 4 years later as a paperback. Her second book, The Path, competed with Jesus CEO, staying on that same list for 9 months. And her third book, Jesus in Blue Jeans, appeared for the first time as number 5 on the publisher's weekly religious bestseller list 3 weeks after publication. On and on. Julie Castiglia's agency is just is a miraculous gift for the West Coast, and Julie is a member of AAR and Penn. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Barbara.
Great to have you again. It's been a couple years.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure that the listeners we have now are the listeners we have then. Would you just talk a little bit about how you became an agent?
Well, it's a kind of an interesting story because I was writing at the time, and I felt as if I needed to be out more and not so isolated, and I answered an ad that said assistant to literary agent because I thought, well, that's the business I know, having published a few books. So I called him, and he said that he had an agency, but he didn't have anybody to do trade books, so he come in and see me. So I went in, and he threw a book at me and said, why don't you read this one? So I took it home, and it was very big. It was about, 700 pages. It was a historical romance written by a 26-year-old girl, and actually it was really good. I mean, for what it was good. So I said, I could probably sell this. He said, okay, come into the office 2 hours a day and see what you can do. So that's the first book I sold, and after that I just kept selling, and I, was in there from early morning to 9 o'clock at night most of the time for years. And then I'd been there about 6 years, and I said to him, I'd really like to go on my own. And he gave me his blessing, let me take all my clients, and said, call me when you get a bestseller. I mean, he was a good mentor, and he really. He's still one of my good friends, and I still actually do books with him. We go back and forth sometimes, but that's how I started. I mean, it was just one of those things. But I've always been into books, period. I mean, books have been just part of my life always. So it just seems natural to be doing this.
Now, are you still writing? And what?
I don't write much anymore, but I do sometimes think about it. And I think if I were to slow down a little bit, I might. I mean, I know other agents who write books, and I don't know how
sure.
they ever find the time.
I mean,
I'm just so busy.
Mm-hmm.
You read in the evenings. You're working all day. I don't know how they do it.
Mm.
But I do know people who have done it.
Mm.
Maybe one day I will.
Yeah, I don't know how they do either. It seems like it has to be one or the other, but
right.
Maybe, I don't know. I know one agent, Lori Fox, who she takes one day a week, and she says that's the day, and it's all writing, and that's it. The rest of the time, she just is an agent.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
She's a good agent, too.
Yeah. So talk about the sorts of stuff you love, or that you just, when it comes in, you definitely look at it.
Well, it's funny, because I would say, if you were to, just off the top of my head, that I really like women's fiction. And I do. That's what I like the most. But recently I had a book in that was so masculine, but it was so good. It was heart-wrenchingly good. I mean, I just couldn't put it down. But again, it needed a lot of work. I mean, I could just see the possibility. So right now he's working with an editor, and I'm going to represent that book. So, you know, you could say what you like, but once in a while something comes in that just knocks your socks off and you change your mind completely. But I personally read women's fiction, but I did read Seabiscuit, and I absolutely loved it. So, you know, it's kind of hard. I guess I like anything that's really, really good, you know, that's got a voice and it just holds your attention. I am representing a thriller right now, which is also not something I normally do, but the protagonist is a woman, and it's a really, really, really well-written thriller. Unusual. You know, I like it if it's going to be a little bit offbeat, mm-hmm. because, you know, everybody sees the same things over and over. So if you're going to write something, I would suggest somebody comes up with a very unique idea, because there are a lot of good writers, but they don't seem to have very unique ideas.
A minute ago you mentioned voice, when something comes in with a particular voice. I was just talking with my beginning students the other night about voice, and this would be a perfect time to have you talk about
what
that is.
I know, and they say, what is it? Well, you know, it's one of those undefinable things, really, because you know it when you see it, but it's really hard to explain. I mean, I kind of can tell when somebody has a voice immediately. It's just that it's written with some kind of uniqueness, some different sensibility. I mean, you can almost tell by the first sentence. And then when you look at the sentences in somebody with a really unique voice, every sentence, any sentence on the page could be lifted out and put separately on a plain piece of paper, and you'd say, what a great sentence. Mm-hmm. That's the difference between somebody who just writes ordinary and somebody who writes extraordinarily well. And I think that's what voice is. It's just something that comes through in the writing that is pretty much undefinable. And I don't think you can tell somebody to have a voice. They either have it or they don't.
Do you think it's how people talk? If they're able to translate that?
I think it's how their brains work. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's how they talk, but I think it's definitely how their brains work and how they, you know, how their syntax works. It's just really, really hard to define. But, you know, anybody who's a professional can recognize it immediately.
Yes.
And you can see it in nonfiction as well as fiction. Just not fiction.
Do you think it matters from genre to genre? Is voice as important in, say, a mystery as it is in, say, a literary novel?
No, definitely not. I think that, you know, with the mystery, you've just got to, you can be, I wouldn't say a mediocre writer, but you could be just a good writer and write a terrific mystery if you've got a great sense of suspense and know how to make it work. So I think you're right. I don't think in genres you have to have the voice as much as you do in literary work. Or even commercial work. I mean, if you're going to write a big commercial novel, it would be good to have a little bit of a different voice, a unique kind of a voice, I think.
Sure. I think of T. Jefferson Parker as far as a suspense or mystery writer goes, and how his voice is very distinct as far as, you know, when you think of genre.
Right. But he rises above the genre.
Yes.
That's the thing. When you said genre, I'm thinking of, you know, you know, there's a lot of people who write romances, a lot of people write mysteries, and they're good. You know, people read them and they like them. But they don't rise up to the next level, and they wouldn't unless they have that kind of a voice that you're talking about. I do have one mystery writer that does have an exceptional voice, and he also has a great sense of how to write a mystery. So
yes.
If you can get those two things together, yeah, you've got something great. But if you're just I see a lot of ordinary writing. We all do, right? I mean, that's what we see mostly. And if you can just, you know, take it up a notch.
Mm-hmm.
Just try to really look at your sentences and see. You know, you can't have a lot of ordinary sentences in a book. It's too boring.
Yes.
and dialogue, too. You have to have a really good ear for dialogue, and that's another thing a lot of people don't have. You read it, and you think, people don't talk like this.
Right, right. You are listening to Writers on Writing. My guest is Julie Castiglia, and her literary agency is in Del Mar, in Southern California. There have been a lot of, apparently a lot of firings and changes and layoffs and all kinds of things going off, going on in publishing right now. How is that affecting things? Is it just the usual?
Jack Romanus, you know, was going to fire 75 people this week, and one of the editors that I had working on a book of mine called, and she said, well, Julie, I'm laid off.
Is that Simon & Schuster?
Yeah, and it really upset me because she happens to be an amazing editor, very young, very bright. And because of that, it was really, excuse me a moment, it was really upsetting to me. And when it hits you personally, I mean, this has been happening a lot lately. You know, Random House did lay off a lot of people. And as you know, Anne Godoff was fired, which is really amazing. She's one of the top editors in publishing and very powerful. But like Romana said, that it's just the market is in, what did he say now? He said sluggish sales may represent a permanent shift in the market rather than a temporary fluctuation. So who knows? Who knows if it's going to bounce back? I mean, there have been these gloom and doom stories over and over again. I've been in publishing for 15 years, and I've heard them over and over again, but I don't think I've heard them from a lot of publishers at once, like this is like happening here.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what will happen. I mean, whether it's the economy, people just aren't buying anything. I don't know. Mm. I mean, the housing market is up in Southern California.
Maybe some of that money could go into books.
All right. But people always like to read.
Of course.
I can't imagine not reading.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, well, in terms of when people do contact you, is it different for fiction and nonfiction? Do you begin different ways with each? Or does it all start with the query?
Well, I would say almost everything I get, I have to work with. I don't get anything that's perfect. I don't think I've ever had either a nonfiction proposal, you know, and I sell books for nonfiction on a proposal. And so the difference is that when you're handling nonfiction, it's easier in many ways. Number one, it's easier because you don't have to read a whole book. You can just read a proposal and sell it on that. And number two, when you've got a really great author with super credentials and a good proposal, you can be pretty assured you're going to sell it. Now, with fiction, it's a whole different thing. You have to see and read the whole manuscript, which takes hours and hours. And then you have to, you know, tell them what's wrong with it, and they have to work on it. And many, many times when I've had fiction, I have told them to work on it, but they just don't get it or they can't do it because they don't have the kind of mind a nonfiction person does. The nonfiction person is like organized, knows what he's writing, knows what it's about, and you tell him to do something, and he or she can usually do it. But with fiction, it's harder, I think, and they're more married to their book, so it's harder for them to change it. But what I do now, because I find it works much better, if I have fiction and I really like it, but I can see it needs some work, I'll send them to an editor, and they have to pay for that. And I've got more than one editor. I'm not, you know, I just don't send them to one person. I have a lot of people to choose from. But I find that works much better for me, and that's what I do now. So those are the two different approaches. Usually with nonfiction, I'm able to get it ready to go to a publisher alone, but with fiction, I don't anymore.
Will you talk about why it's necessary, if you were wanting to sell a novel, why you have to finish the novel before you really should go to an agent, and why with nonfiction you can get by with, you know, writing a couple of chapters?
Well, it's easy to say, because with a novel, and first novel anyway, nobody really knows if that person can pull it off. And you can't tell from two chapters of a novel what the rest of the novel is going to be like. So I've seen a lot of fantastic writers who could never get a story together or a plot together or make it happen or get through the middle of a novel, which is the very hardest part to get through. So that's why they used to sometimes buy partial novels. They don't do it much anymore. Of course, they'll do it with a seasoned writer. I mean, I have some people who write who can just send an outline and they'll buy it.
Hmm.
But that's somebody who's really proved themselves. And
sure.
Then in that case, they can write a detailed outline and they can see, they know that this person can do it. But with a new novel, no, you have to have the whole thing.
Yes. What about the query letter? I would imagine this is how most writers approach you. How can you tell from a query letter whether you are going to want to see the work, especially if it's fiction? Especially if it's fiction.
Right. You can tell a lot from a query letter. I usually ask fiction writers to send me a query letter and 2 pages of writing just so that I can see the style of the writing, the tone of the novel, and, you know, whether the person has a voice, whether they, you know, whether it jumps off the page at me. And that's why I ask for a query letter and 2 pages of writing. But if they send me a query letter and it's, you know, beautifully written and they tell me a lot about themselves, then a lot of times they can seduce me with the query letter and I'll ask to see it. But see, with nonfiction, it's easy because nonfiction has a lot to do with credentials of the person.
Mm-hmm. So is the writing not as important? Or is it just
always
that,
important? It's always important.
But I mean, in terms of the credentials, like, do the credentials pull a certain amount of weight so that if the writing isn't as miraculous as, say, fiction, then it's...
Yeah, the writing doesn't have to be miraculous in nonfiction. It has to be very informative, and it has to be very well organized and focused. That's what I would say a nonfiction has to be. It, of course, you always want the writing to be good. And it has to be good, but you can get away with more with nonfiction because it's pretty cut and dried. Although, when I've spoken at conferences, I say that I like to see a lot of energy in the writing. If you're going to write nonfiction, you know, I want to see some personality and energy for sure. But it's so different from fiction. So many nonfiction writers want to write fiction, but they can't.
Hmm.
And yet they write very good nonfiction.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing. We were doing a bit of car maneuvering out in the parking lot. But I'm back, and I'm back with my next guest, Douglas Lyle. After being born and raised in Huntsville, Alabama, Doug left Huntsville for college, medical school, and an internship at the University of Alabama, followed by a residency in internal medicine at the University of Texas at Houston, then a fellowship in cardiology at the Texas Heart Institute, also in Houston. For the past 25 years, he's practiced cardiology in Orange County, right here where we sit at this moment. He writes The Doctor Is In, a monthly medical and forensic Q&A column, which appears in The March of Crime and Sleuth Sayer, the newsletters for the Southern California and Southwestern chapters of Mystery Writers of America, respectfully. His 2 thrillers, Devil's Playground and Double Blind, were released in 2003. His book, Murder and Mayhem, A Doctor Answers Medical and Forensic Questions for Mystery Writers, was recently released by St. Martin's Press and is a complication of the most interesting questions he has received over the years. Hi, Doug.
How you doing, Barbara?
I think I'm going to have a heart attack. All this jockeying cars here. I might need you real quick here. Talk about Murder and Mayhem and how this book came about.
Well, it was really interesting. It all started, our past president of the Southern California Mystery Writers Chapter put out a call. She was in charge of the newsletter, and it was a little thin, and she put out a call for people to write articles. So I told her, sure, I'd be happy to write one. You know, what'd you think? And she said, well, something on medicine, forensics, or something like that. I said, cool. So I wrote a thing on how the coroner times death. In the first 48 hours after death, how it determines the time of death. It was called Timely Death. And when it was published, it got a whole lot of feedback. So Jan said, would you, you know, write some more articles? I said, sure. And she said, maybe answer some questions. And I said, sure. So we put together the question and answer column, and it just took off. And other chapters picked it up. And always got a lot of feedback, and after about a year and a half, I said, you know, these questions are so popular and everybody enjoys them. Maybe I should put them together in a book, and I did, and the rest is history.
So how did you sell the book then? It sounds like it was completed before you approached anyone, or did you use a book proposal, or what did you do?
Oh, no, I got it completed and ready to go and polished and all of that. It didn't take long because I had already basically, you know, answered all the questions, and I had all the questions sent to me, so it was a matter of going in and editing and cleaning up the questions and the answers and double-checking most of the research and stuff like that. And then, interestingly, when I got it done, I called my agent, Kimberly Cameron, and I said, Kimberly, I got a book for you, and you're going to love it. And she said, what is it about? I said, I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to send it to you. And she laughed, and she said, fine. So I packaged it up, and I sent it to her, and 2 days later, she called me, and she said, this is fabulous. I'll have no trouble selling this. And indeed, 6 days later, after 6 days after we sent it out, St. Martin's called and said, we want this.
That's a wonderful thing.
Oh, it was, you know. Yeah. Luck of the draw, what can you say?
Yeah. This is an interesting book, and, you know, mystery writers are always wondering about these things that are in this book. You know, what type of bacterial meningitis is most likely to infect adolescents? I mean, it's interesting, the topics and the subtopics in here. What are mystery writers most interested in, if you can even say, when it comes to forensics and you know, questions regarding forensics?
Sure. I mean, they obviously, when you're writing a mystery, a thriller like that, it's almost always revolves around murder. And the reason is that's the most heinous of all crimes. You know, if somebody robs a bank, it's kind of like, well, that's bad, but, you know, so what? But if someone kills someone, it's very personal. And so the hero gets personally involved in that. The cop who is tracking it down gets personally involved in the case. So people mainly want to know about methods of doing away with people and getting away with it. And in that regard, they want to know how the coroner will trip up the perpetrator, how they will find the poison, how they will determine the cause of death, what it will look like, what the victim will feel like and look like and go through while dying, and that kind of stuff, so that they can add realism to their story, because that's what sells it.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Now, how do you know all of this? being a cardiologist.
That's a good question. I do get asked that a lot. I mean, number one, you know, I know medicine, being an internist and a cardiologist,
sure,
and having practiced it for, you know, 30 years, I still have to look stuff up. It's out of my specialty, of course. But forensics, I really have no background in, no more than anybody else. But I can pick up, which I have sitting right here next to me, two or three of them, I can pick up a forensic pathology textbook or a toxicology book, and I can understand the language.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they're talking about when they're talking about half-lives of drugs, and they're talking about how they work and inside the body and how they affect the different organs. To me, it's very straightforward and very simple because it's a language that I live with on a daily basis. So I look at my job is to take that information, translate it into English, explain what the writer needs to know about the science, and then tell them how they can best use that material in their story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a translator, basically.
Interesting. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. I'm talking with Doug Lyle, MD. He's author of Murder and Mayhem, A Doctor Answers Medical and Forensic Questions for Mystery Writers. Talk about consulting for, or consulting to TV shows, and what sort of things do they want to know? Say, you know, I see Law and Order on your book flap. I mean, what do they have to make sure of, and why do they come to you?
Well, it's fairly much the same thing, except Hollywood can play a little looser with the rules than writers do most of the time, and that's okay. That's what makes it fun. I've worked with Law and Order and CSI Miami before the writer I knew there got canned. Diagnosis Murder with Lee Goldberg and Monk and Judging Amy. And I get called from time to time or get emails from time to time from the writers and producers of the shows where they will have a problem in a script that they just don't quite understand how they can get from point A to point B and make it realistic. And I must say, if I'm talking to colleagues, medical colleagues, about a situation, we deal in probabilities and then possibilities. But probabilities are boring because common things occur commonly, and writers don't like to write about common things. When I deal with writers, I deal with possibilities and then a little bit beyond. You don't have to stay strictly within the realm of reality in fiction, as long as it's believable and makes sense and is at least quasi-possible.
Uh-huh.
You can't go way out there unless you're writing horror or fantasy and science fiction. Then you can do anything you want.
Hmm. Well, you're also the author of two thrillers, Devil's Playground and Double Blind. And what's the difference for you, writing fiction and nonfiction?
They are different processes, and I really enjoy both. From a nonfiction point of view, I mean, I like the research, I like the organization, I like having to do the outline and getting all the material in there and getting it in an organized fashion. But then after you do that, I think fiction writing skills come in to communicate that information in simple terms so that the average reader can understand complex issues. And that's always a hammer and sawing job. You got to decide what to put in, what to leave out, how to picture it, how to make it understandable. Fiction, on the other hand, I find extremely gratifying because it's kind of like, where else can you do all the stuff? You can be James Bond, or you can be a serial killer, or you can be a super cop, or you can be, a child, playing in the street. You can do whatever you want to do as a fiction writer, and you wear all those hats and live all those roles while you're writing the story, as you well know.
Yes.
That's the beauty of fiction writing, is you get to play all the characters.
Hmm. How is it that two novels were released in the same year? do you just never sleep?
Pretty much. I have three cats. And they have different time schedules. Two of them are daytime and one of them's nocturnal, so we don't get much sleep around here.
But really, I mean, how, three books coming out pretty much at the same time.
Well, actually, I had one done and peddled it around for a long time. It took a while to find it a home. And then while I was doing that, I was writing, and those are actually the second and the third novels. The first novel was put in the drawer. And now that I know a little bit more about storytelling, I've pulled it out and hammered it into something workable, and it's an editor's working over it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've started two others. I always have two or three things going at once because you find that your creative juices go in different directions at different times. And I'll almost always have a nonfiction project and a fiction project going. Like right now, I have two nonfiction projects and two fiction projects that I'm kind of round-robining around. So which one I work on a given day.
Yeah. How about getting an agent? My first guest was an agent, Julie Castiglia in Del Mar. And now, in talking to an author, will you talk about getting an agent and how that was for you? Did you begin with a query, and did you begin the way that the books say this is how you get an agent?
Yes and no. I tried them all. I my first book, which pretty much was garbage, I sent it out to 40 or 50 agents and had eight of them that wanted to see the entire manuscript, and three of them offered me contracts, and it turned out none of them were very good, but that's another issue. You do have to do that, and writing query letters is an art in itself, but I think people make it harder than it should be. It is a business letter, and you have to look at it that way, and what you're trying to do in that letter is say, hello, this is who I am, this is what I've written, and this is why I think you should look at it. And leave it at that. Don't get cute. I mean, think if you were writing a letter to the president of General Motors or somebody, you wouldn't get cute and funny, and you wouldn't get sarcastic, and you wouldn't get anything except very professional, very straightforward, short and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Less is always best. Because the writing is going to speak for itself. And if you don't do a lot of crazy stuff in the query letter, they're going to turn to page one, and they're going to start reading.
Yeah.
If you goof around in the query letter, they're probably going to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
And send it back unopened, practically. But once they start reading, if you've written a good product, they'll say, And if you've written a bad product, they'll say, no. I mean, it's as simple as that. But you got to find the right project getting in the right agent's lap on the right day. It has to be what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, they not only have to like it, they have to be able to sell it. And those are two entirely different propositions.
That's often a difficult thing for writers to understand. Isn't it?
And the other thing is, I think, establishing personal relationships. My agent, Kimberly, she's fabulous. But Kimberly and I met 10 years, literally, before she ever took me on as a writer. And I sent her a couple of stuff that she rejected. But she was very kind and very professional about it. I like this, but I can't sell it, that kind of thing, which is kind of standard in the industry, but that's partially true. But she's a very nice, very professional person, and we've always gotten along, and we see each other at the San Diego Writers' Conference, at the Maui Writers' Conference, at different conferences, at the Edgars this year, and now we've become good friends, and not only that, now we work together. And it makes all the difference in the world. Remember, these agents get thousands of letters and queries and chapters and stuff every year. And anything you can do to make your relationship with them personal and that they know who you are, the better off you're going to be. And that, again, I heard the end of the last conversation you had with the agent, is go to conferences.
Yeah.
Go to conferences and meet them and say hello. Be polite. Be professional. Don't stalk them. You know, don't occupy all their time. But you know, just be professional and say, this is my name, this is what I've done, and I would love to talk to you and send you some stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you send your query letter, say, we met at such and such conference, you know, and this is my story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. My agent, I knew her for a number of years before she became my agent. She'd been on my show. She participated in a writer's conference that I was co-chair on. She came on my show again. I referred students to her. And this went on for a few years, really, before I approached her with my stuff. And I think, you know, as you say, one thing that writers leave out of the equation, the publishing equation, is networking and how there's a business side like any business. It's an art. I mean, writing is an art form, but without the business side, your stuff doesn't get out there.
Absolutely. And the personal relationship is so important because, I mean, think about it. If you read a book by somebody you didn't know and thought that was cool, but what if you read a book by your next-door neighbor or your brother? You know, you'd say, wow, you know, because you have a personal attachment to it. And I think writers and agents have to have a personal relationship. At least I think that's the best.
Mm-hmm.
It's not absolutely necessary, but I think it makes working together so much smoother.
Yes. I am talking with Doug Lyle, author of Murder and Mayhem, A Doctor Answers Medical and Forensic Questions for Mystery Writers. And if I haven't already said so, the opinions and views expressed on this show are those of me and my guests and not the University of California Regents. Will you talk about your process, Doug? I mean, you get so much done. Are you extremely organized? Do you have specific times every day that you write? And when you sit down to write, do you know exactly what you're going to be doing?
Most of the time. I mean, I do not set aside these 2 hours or what I'm going to write or these 4 hours or what I'm going to write. I usually end up working on something, whether it's answering questions for people on my website or working on one of the books. I usually end up working anywhere from 3 to 6 hours a day on that. But I don't believe in carving out a time that says this is when you're going to do it. Because sometimes you wake up early in the morning at 5 o'clock and you just come down, sit down, and write a couple hours. Sometimes when I get home from the office, I'll sit down and write a couple hours. Sometimes it's late at night. It just depends on when you want to. Now, if that muse only hits you for 2 hours a month, you're not going to get a lot done. But if it hits you for 3 or 4 hours a day, you're going to get a whole lot done.
Mm-hmm.
And different people have different ways of doing it. One thing I absolutely recommend is outlining, and especially your first book and second book and third book. You must know where you're going and what you're doing. After that, it gets a little easier because the organization comes more natural. But in the beginning, you have to know where the beginning, the middle, and the end are. And I think a lot of writers do not do that, and they end up with, you know, 500 pages of stuff that makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever find pieces of your life leaking into your fiction?
Oh, I think you do. I think you do naturally, not because you can only write what you know, and you know everything that you know. I think in medicine you have an advantage, and that advantage is that you meet a lot of people, and you meet a lot of people from every walk of life, and often you meet them at their best and their worst because they're under stress. And when people are sick and they're not feeling well or they're, you know, in a life and death situation, people either can act like heroes and they can act like real SOBs and everywhere in between. But the point is it's all driven by fear. And that is what writing mysteries and thrillers is all about, is fear. And so you see people and you understand how different people react, so you can create characters a little better that way. And stories are always about character, so I think that helps.
Do you start with character or plot with your novels?
Both. My two novels have the same heroine, the same Samantha Cody, is the same character in it, and it made it easy to know who I was dealing with. I had to, you know, create all the other characters that made the story, the antagonist and all the people that either helped or hindered her process. But the thing I think the one thing that you have to know in writing stories is how it's going to end. You don't have to know where it's going to start, but you must know where it's going to end. And then you start it as close to the ending as you can and still make an understandable story. A lot of writers will, and I did too, you write three or four chapters of stuff that's really all backstory, meaning it's got something to do with the character, it's got nothing to do with the story, and you end up cutting all that stuff out. So why not just start where the action starts?
Mm-hmm. Now talk about Samantha Cody and picking her as a protagonist.
Well, she's actually based on a friend of mine. Renee O'Connor, who played Gabrielle on the Zenith series, and I've known Renee since she was 12 years old, and her parents, her mom, and all. I mean, it's just, you know, she's a great girl and just does great work, and Zenith turned out to be a great series for her, which we teased her about it's kind of a funny slapstick story for someone who's very serious about her craft. But Samantha Cody is this little strawberry blonde girl who happens to be a cop and also happens to be a professional fighter, or a wannabe professional fighter. And she's feisty, and she's sarcastic, and she's tough, and she is relentless. And some people might say those are kind of male qualities, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, read Patricia Cornwell.
Right.
And her heroines are always tough.
Right. That's interesting. So talk about revision then. How much revision do you do? And do you like it? Do you hate it? How do you feel about it?
Actually, I love rewriting. I think it's the best part because I think that's where the story really comes to life. When I teach writing, as I do from time to time, I always tell the students, write the story fast. Now, that does not mean stream of consciousness, Jack Kerouac stuff, where you just write a bunch of stuff that comes to your mind. What it means is that don't worry about sentence structure and paragraph structure, and don't worry about getting all the verbs, you know, the best verb you can squeeze out. Just story. Tell the story and get out of the way. And tell the story as quickly and as completely as you can. And the reason is, if you spend months revising the first three chapters, you're going to change all that stuff by the end anyway, because you do not know your characters until you get to the end of the story. And so consequently, how they act, think, talk, believe, feel in chapters 1, 2, and 3 will change by the time you get to know them better. So you're going to have to change all that beautiful writing anyway. Save that for the rewrite. And I rewrite 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, always.
Hmm. Really? So, how much of that is intense revision, and how much is tweaking?
The first three rewrites are almost always pretty intense, mm-hmm. where I will move stuff around and change things, because then I have a better feel for the story, and I'll write new chapters and leave chapters out and move scenes around and stuff. But by the time you get it written three times, you should have it pretty well done. And then it's a matter of going back and making the sentences a little more active and a little better structured and getting a little different flow and adding this and that and the other to it. But by three rewrites, you should have the story 90% done.
Hmm. Interesting. We have a couple of minutes left, and I wonder if you have any words of wisdom for the writers listening who may be struggling with... you know, really just working it and living the life of a writer, being disciplined, getting their work to a place where perhaps they can think about publishing or right. Finding an agent.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, real simple. Bryce Courtney, who wrote The Power of One, the most published writer, most sold writer in Australia, says the key to writing is one thing. It's bum glue. It's gluing your bum to a chair and writing. And that means you've got to do it. You must do it. And second, it is an art and a craft. The art is the storytelling. The craft is the writing. Get the art done first. Tell the story the way you want it to be told, and then go back and fix it. It's as simple as that. It sounds simple. It is simple, and people make it hard. I know I did. It took 2.5 years to write my first book because I was terrified of writing a sentence that wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
Who cares? You're going to fix it later.
Right.
Tell the story and then write it.
That's good advice. and not and don't keep going back to the first chapter for perfecting it.
Try not to, absolutely.
Because you will lose it. You will lose it for the work.
Yes. You got to have forward momentum all the time.
Yes. Yeah. I so appreciate you taking the time to come on.
My pleasure. And appreciate you having me.
Oh, yeah. I wish you continued luck with your books. And come on with the next one.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That was Doug Lyle, author of Murder and Mayhem, A Doctor Answers Medical and Forensic Questions for Mystery Writers, published by St. Martin's. He's also author of the two thrillers, Devil's Playground and Double Blind. And he's here in Orange County, so look for his name in the LA Times Book Review, giving readings and such here and there. Oh, what else can I tell you? If you have comments or questions or would like to know about future guests and events in the area, visit my website at writersonwriting.com. There you can sign up to be on the mailing list or you can email me. And I'd like to leave you with a quote by Fran Lebowitz, who said, "Contrary to what many of you might imagine, a career in letters is not without its drawbacks. Chief among them is the unpleasant fact that one is frequently called upon to actually sit down and write." Yes. You've been listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Thank you for listening, and please stay safe.